Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on marriage when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and your local family court. Now, the best part about it is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, the divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders, but you get to pay for all of the above. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And I'll bet you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. And 67%, two-thirds of all marriages in America end in divorce. So whether you're a husband or a wife, remember you've got rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against for any breach of this marriage agreement or contract. That's why I contend that you ought to know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of letting someone else, such as the state, write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about this law and marriage contract. Just call direct, 417-273-4967. As for our free general law CD package, it's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. It's an easy one to remember. Click onto the email machine, and when you get onto the email, send us a free email request for that general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Marriage. Well, nearly everybody marries. When I was a kid, everybody was looking forward to marriage. Since I grew up, though, a lot of people have decided that marriage isn't for them, so they just live together. And there's a lot of that going on. In fact, older people, 65 or older, on Social Security, if their wives or husbands die and they decide that they want to share their lives with somebody else, instead of marrying, they just live together, because if they were to remarry, it would impact adversely on their Social Security or their pensions. And they don't want to do that, so of course they avoid marriage. Young people, not wanting to get involved in marriage, will shack up, as they used to say when I was a kid, or they just live together. And then of course there's the traditional marriage, and that's what makes some of these people who live together so nervous, is because of the divorce rate at 67%. Two out of every three marriages in America, once entered into, are going to, are destined to, will eventually end in divorce. And that gets kind of nasty. Divorces aren't very fun, and everybody can see that. There's this alimony and child support, custody battles and property arguments and And to avoid all of that, people have come to the conclusion, or a lot of people have come to the conclusion, that living together is okay, marriage is a bad idea. So let's explore some of these concepts and see what the pluses and minuses are. There's about 42 things concerning marriage, including divorce, that you ought to be aware of. 42 things. I like to get orderly, and I sat down and I wrote out a list, a chart, a little guide to go by so that we could cover some of the important areas, issues, problems that come up in this institution called marriage. It's an old institution. It goes back to the Garden of Eden. Garden of Eden. We don't have a marriage ceremony. We don't have Adam and Eve getting married, but we find that Eve was Adam's wife. Not his girlfriend or his shack up or his mistress or some casual sexual partner. Eve was Adam's wife, and she's called that plainly. And Adam was Eve's husband, and we're told that in the scripture. They were husband and wife. They were married. There's no marriage ceremony mentioned in the Bible. I always thought that when people got married, the marriage ceremony was about in the middle of the Bible. I can remember going to a number of weddings, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's Catholic or Protestant. The preacher always opens the Bible to about the middle. You know, he doesn't leave it closed. He opens it. And then he reads, and he says words like, "Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to join this man and this woman in holy matrimony." And I thought, well, he's reading that right out of the Bible. So, one day I got to looking for the marriage ceremony in the Bible, and so I opened it up to about the middle, and I started reading, you know, around Ezekiel someplace. And then I read in both directions. I finally ended up reading the whole Bible, cover to cover, border to border. And the statement, all of these marriage ceremonies that I'd heard quoted, you know, "Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today," taint in the Bible. I discovered. I had to read the whole Bible to find that out. I was too dumb to go to a concordance and look up "Dearly beloved," but I got an education. And then it taught me another thing, that just because some preacher opens the Bible doesn't mean that he's quoting from the Bible or that he's quoting the Bible truly, accurately, or correctly. A lot of times they'll tell you, "The Bible says," but then when you go look it up, it doesn't say that. It usually says the exact opposite. So I've learned not to trust preachers. They're kind of deceptive critters. But there's a preacher, a Baptist pastor, that gives us or sheds a little light on the subject of marriage, gives us a little insight. His name is Dr. Everett Sullivan. He's a Baptist pastor and has gained renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than to license his school. And in a recent talk to a Missouri congregation back in March of 1983, now this is 23 years ago, here's what he said concerning this marriage thing 23 years ago as it relates to licensing. He said, "Now many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? And let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. I've never been charged with breaking the law, and I've never been charged with committing a crime. I never even had a trial." So you might ask again, well, how in the world then did they get you in jail? Well, I may not know much about your church, and I may hit you in the ribs here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell you people here in these churches. You see, the state sued the corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state. And the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license out for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took the license out for. Now I'm going to give you a shocker, and I don't like to do this because it makes me look ridiculous, but you see, we've learned a few things. For 6 years, we went down to the legislature, and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Well, now, I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say that the legislature did not give us any of the relief that we were seeking. And I'm glad they didn't, because the Constitution says that that's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But you see, as we testified before the subcommittee, the parents would testify and they'd weep and they'd say, now these are our children and God gave us these children and we're responsible for them, as they'd look across the table at those senators. Well, one senator, Senator Pfeiffer, he's a young fellow, about 38 years old, an attorney and a legislator. Well, he was on the subcommittee, on the education subcommittee. And these parents were testifying, and Mr. Pfeiffer, the senator, looked back across the table, and he said to this one young mother who had just completed her testimony, and he said, ma'am, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, quote, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege granted by the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state, unquote. Did you catch that, boys and girls? Now, this is a senator, a legislator, a lawyer, and he just told you something that was very, very important. Let me read it to you again. He asked this lady a question. He said, ma'am, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, well, then, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege? Privilege. Franchise. It's a gift. It's no rights involved here, lady. It's a privilege from the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state. The child belongs to the state. The child is a ward of the state. The child isn't yours. The child belongs to the state. That's why social lady comes in and takes your children away from you 2.3 million times a year and puts them in foster care. It's because you got a marriage license, which was a privilege from the state, and every child born under the marriage license is a ward, property of the state, not you and not your wife. Now I went on, and Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me debating that issue. And what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the State School Board Association and by the executive director of the teachers' union. Four people. They all said the same thing. We were on Channel 6 live at 5. So the moderator looked over at me and she said, well, Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers. So surely it must not be that important of an issue. And Sullivan responded, well, you're right. And there is a way to solve this problem, national standardized testing. You see, we had our students tested by the state's own experts. And we're a year ahead of the public schools and 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools. We were so good, in fact, that the judge wouldn't even let us put that into the record. Well, she looked over at Senator Hoagland and she said, well, Senator, then why is the state of Nebraska making such a big deal out of this? Yeah. Why does the state make such a big deal out of child custody or homeschooling or parochial schools or licensed teachers and so on? So Senator Hoagland had this to say. Now listen up. He said, quote, "The reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate their children in their doctrines. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of a one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in." Did you get that, children? I'm going to read that to you again, because a lot of times, you know, you hear a statement, you say, "Oh my God, what did he say?" All right, now listen up. Senator Hoagland, this is March 1983. This is in Omaha, Nebraska, Channel 6, live at 5. And the moderator looks over and says, "All right, Senator Hoagland, why is it that the state of Nebraska is making such a big deal out of these licensed and certified teachers and these marriage licenses?" And so here's Senator Peter Hoagland, and he says, "The reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate their children in their religious doctrines. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of the one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in." All right. Now, did you get that? Now, that's quite a little story, and it's got its foundation in this thing called marriage. And not just any kind of marriage, a particular kind of marriage called a civil law marriage. Civil law marriage. That's a marriage with a marriage license. That's a marriage where you have a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. And most of you people listening to me right now have a normal, steady, everyday garden variety state civil law marriage. You went down to the state and you got a marriage license. And I suppose nobody explained to you that every child that is born to people who have a state marriage license, the child belongs to the state, and it comes under the doctrine of parens patriae. Now, there's two other forms of marriage, just in case it should ever come up, you know, in a conversation someplace, and somebody brings up marriage, and you think to yourself, well, okay, so what's the big deal? There's only one kind of marriage. No, there's three kinds of marriage. Three! You had a choice. You can have a state civil law marriage, a common law marriage, or a patriarchal marriage. Three! Now, of course, here in America, we all opt for our civil law marriages. I used to have one of those. And then it ended in divorce, and so the second time I married, I thought, well, the first one didn't work out so well, so I think maybe I'll change my modus operandi. So I opted for the patriarchal marriage. So I'm one of the patriarchs of the Gordon family. In fact, in my branch, I am the patriarch. And when I die, the new patriarch will take over. And we do things a little differently than the state of Nebraska, a little differently than the state of Florida. And then you have this thing called a common law marriage. Now, there aren't very many states that will recognize or practice common law marriage. Texas does. Tennessee doesn't. So you can have a common law marriage in Texas, but you can't have a common law marriage in Tennessee because they won't recognize it. You can have a patriarchal marriage in Texas or a common law marriage in Texas and then move to Tennessee. And Tennessee will give you full faith and credit because you were married in Tennessee. married in Texas, but you live or reside in Tennessee, comes under the full faith and credit clause of your Constitution. But, you know, by and large, the average Joe Sixpack, he's not really too concerned about that, because people, when they marry, are usually in heat. And people in heat, it's kind of like a bull and a cow out in the field, you know. There's no fence that keeps a bull in, you know, when he sees the cow in heat on the other side. That's the way life is. Well, same thing's true with humans, you know. They're not concerned with the legal ramifications of this marriage business until long after the marriage has transpired. But when social lady comes knocking on the door, people get real uptight real fast. They get real excited. When divorce times come, boy, then people get real excited about marriage and marriage license and one thing and another. Very few people ever connect the dots. And as I said, there's 42 dots here to connect. So this week we're going to connect these 42 dots. And so dot number one is the Everett Sullivan, the Baptist pastor, who discovered that every child born to families with state marriage licenses or wards of the state, and that Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine. Now, that's why they took the Ten Commandments out of public school, took the Bible out of public school. We don't want that kind of crap messing up the minds of the state's children. That's the bottom line. Now, the second dot that we should connect up here is called the student section of common law marriage in Tennessee, where we learn that marriage has been defined by the Tennessee Supreme Court as follows. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. It is rather to be deemed an institute of society, founded upon the consent and the contract of the parties, and in this view it has some peculiarities in its nature, character, operation, and extent of obligation different from what belong to ordinary contracts. See, this marriage contract is something different than an ordinary contract. The marriage contract, children, is an extraordinary contract. It's an adhesion contract. It's a contract that's different from any contract you've ever engaged in, ever signed up for, ever got involved in, ever read, ever knew anything about. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this marriage contract with the state, boy, it's an extraordinary contract. Got it right here. And we're citing here, there's a little number down here, number 9. that leads you down here to McKinney versus Clark, 32 Tennessee 320, decided back in 1852. And then there's Smith versus North Memphis Savings Bank, decided back in 115 Tennessee 12, back in 1905. And then Vernier, American Family Law, 1931. Every one of these statements in here has an authority by it. This is what the Supreme Court has decided. And it's binding on you. So it's no wonder that people are starting, you know, a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people are getting suspicious about this marriage thing. They know something's wrong with it. They don't know quite what's wrong with it, but when social lady comes in and takes their children, they get suspicious right away that, hey, wait a minute, we're involved in something here that ought not to be. Or when they go to educate their children over here in home school and they find out that they got the school board on their backs, hey, they start asking, well, where does this come from? Where does this state interference in our marriage and in our family come from? How did the state get involved in our families? Well, because you invited them in, signed up, got a contract, declared yourselves to be incompetent, unable to manage your marriage. So, going on, they tell us that unlike other contracts, it is indissoluble between the parties. You see, if you and I had a contract, and you and I decided that we wanted to dissolve our contract, we could do that. But when you enter into this marriage contract, and you and I decide that we want to dissolve our contract, we can't dissolve it. That's what makes it so extraordinary. This isn't an ordinary contract. This is extraordinary. We can't dissolve it. When this contract is consummated according to law, it is of perpetual obligation, and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties. See, the boy and girl decide to get married. And then they go contract with the state so that we have a three-party limited general partnership. The boy, the girl, and the state. Now, the boy and the girl decide they want to dissolve the contract, or maybe they want to change the terms of the contract. And the third party comes in and says, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. This contract contains and continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or agreement of the parties, but to some extent these are matters of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. Let's try this for a minute. Let's suppose that you come in here to my school, and then you sit down here at my classroom table. And I say to you, Joe, Mary, I would like to enter into a contract with you. And Clause 18 of the contract is going to specifically state that you and your wife have no control over the terms and conditions of this contract. I will have 100% control over the terms and conditions. And that you, Joe and Mary, you can't declare a dissolution to this contract. If you want to dissolve it, you've got to come to me. And if there are any changes to be made in this contract, I will make them, and you can have absolutely no input or control over the terms and conditions of this contract, past, present, or future. Now, would you sign a contract like that with me? Well, then, excuse me, but I'm a pretty nice guy. And if you wouldn't sign a contract like that with me, a pretty nice guy, why would you sign a contract like that with some nameless, faceless bureaucrat that you've never met, don't know, don't recognize, and couldn't find at high noon with a road map? Why in the world would you sign that same contract with him? Huh? But you know you did. Yeah, you've got a contract with the state of Missouri or with the state of California. You don't know who's administering that contract. You've never met that guy. You couldn't find him. You don't even know where this guy's at. But you wait until this divorce comes down, Sally, and you'll find out who that is. So the rights and duties that grow out of this contract are not left to the option or agreement of the parties, that's Joe and Mary, but to some extent, they're matters of municipal regulation, that's the state, over which the will of the parties, that's your will. I mean, it could be an agreement between you, Joe, and Mary. Your will can have no control. None. Zero. It is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order. That's right. This is a socialist order. This is social order. This is a socialist program. Marriage. Marriage. Yeah, the civil law marriage is a socialist idea. Comes right out of the Communist Manifesto. And morality. Morality. It's the state morality. You know, that's the same good folks that gave you this concept of no Ten Commandments, no prayer, and no Bible in your public school, separation of church and state. You know, the same government that operated a whorehouse called Mustang Ranch out in Pershing County, Nevada for 16 months and then sold it at a profit called the IRS. Excuse me, boys and girls. Do you really, honest to God, believe that a government that operates a whorehouse is a source of morality? Is that what you subscribe to? And it constitutes the chief cornerstone of the whole structure of civilized society. Did you get that? Hey, did you get that? The government that operates a whorehouse in Nevada constitutes the whole structure of civilized society in its marriage statutes and decrees. It's the source of morality, totally apart from God, apart from the Bible, apart from the Ten Commandments, with a total separation, a wall between that type of morality and the morality of the state, which funds abortions and legalizes sodomy. And that's called the structure of morality of the state. Now, on another occasion, our Supreme Court, this is the Supreme Court of Tennessee, now speaking of a common law marriage. See, now here's the second one I told you about. You get the civil law marriage, that's the one we just covered. Now, here comes the common law marriage. It says, no particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. It's a simple agreement by a man and woman that they would live together as man and wife, and it constituted a valid marriage. Oh, my God. You mean that a boy and a girl could just sit down at the table and say, hey, do you agree to live with me and be my wife? Yeah, y'all do that. Hey, do you agree to live with me and be my husband and support me and take care of my kids? Yep, I'll do that. You mean that that's all there is to it? Well, just one more thing, boys and girls. Marriage is created by two indici. It's an agreement, number one, and penetration, number two, and that's what constitutes marriage. Now, of course, if you want a contract with the state, you can have that also. Now, there's a third type of marriage called the patriarchal marriage. I'm going to save that for a little later in the program. But right now, we've got to talk about, you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, so let's take the second dot, the Tennessee Law Review, and let's put him over here. Now, when you get to the point in your marriage where you start having children, the next thing we have to have is a birth certificate. Is there something about this birth certificate that you ought to know about? Well, I got a letter here from the County of Shasta. This is Shasta County, California, from the Health Services Agency, the Department of Public Health. And it's addressed to Mrs. Nancy Robinson, and it was signed by Social Lady Linda Allen. And Social Lady wrote a letter to Mrs. Robinson, and she said, "Dear Mrs. Robinson, as I understand it, you gave birth to twin girls on July 30th, 1985 at the Mercy Medical Center of Redding, California. And also understand from the hospital staff that you did not desire to register the birth of your girls with them at this time. So I'm writing to you to inform you of information that you may not be aware of. Now, according to state regulations, if you do not register your daughter's birth within the first year of their delivery, they would then have to be registered on a delayed registration of birth form, and the cost would be, at this time, $15. Now, considering the fact that you delivered in a hospital, and that you had a physician in attendance, this would probably be of no consequence or trouble for you now. But in later years, this may be a problem for your daughters. Now, I'm sure that you're aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. In 20 years, the hospital records could have been destroyed and your physician may not be available to help you or your girls. Consider the fact that in order to be registered for school, apply for a marriage license, grants, or scholarships in school, the state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate. The federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, a passport, or a social security card. Now, when you realize all of the times that they may need their certificate of birth, you may want to contact me, and we can arrange to have them taken care of for you. Please contact me if you have any questions in this matter. Sincerely, Linda Allen, Social Lady." Did you catch that last paragraph? "Consider the fact that in order to be registered for school..." Now, all of you homeschoolers out there, all of you people that are concerned about parochial school and truancy and so on, in order to be registered for school, you have to have a birth certificate. Well, did it ever occur to you that if you didn't have a birth certificate, you couldn't be registered in public school? Now, of course, for all of you people who want to be registered in public school, you should rush right out and get a birth certificate. And for those of you who do not want public school, who do want homeschool, who do not want to be hassled by Social Lady, did it ever occur to you that instead of giving your child to the state, that you might want to keep your child for yourselves? I know it's a wild new idea for most of you that you should actually own your own child. But mull it over. Think about it. Maybe these little bread snappers aren't as bad as you thought they were. The state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate if you want these free government services. Well, why don't you try something wild and new? Why don't you waive the government services and support yourself? Yeah, why don't you grow up and act like a real big boy, and you support your own family without welfare and food stamps and aid to families with dependent children? You know, take on those duties that God imposed upon you when you got married. Some of these marriage duties, you know. Women have a duty of marriage. Did you know that? And we kind of expect you girls out there to perform your woman's duty of marriage. Well then, girls, shouldn't you expect your husband to perform his husband's duty of marriage and support you? Take care of you? Because the minute you go on welfare, then your husband has declared, well, I'm unable to carry out my husband's duty of supporting my family, so therefore I need the state. So I need this partnership with the state. Well, okay. But then the state comes in and says, well, boys and girls, that's how we got to pay for it. It's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Do you remember that in Wickard versus Filburn? Now, Jesus told us, the poor you have with you always. But, you know, for some of us, we might not be quite that poor, and maybe we could support ourselves without giving our children to the state. Think about it. Now look at the federal government. They require a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service. Did it ever occur to you, all you people that are opposed to the draft, all of you people that are opposed to military conscription and the war in Iraq, that instead of giving your sons to the state for cannon fodder, that you might keep them for yourselves without a birth certificate? Huh? I know. Again, it's kind of wild, but mull it over. I didn't write this, by the way. This comes from Social Lady. And Social Lady is trying to con Mrs. Robinson into getting a birth certificate for her daughters. It's so rare that real people would have babies in America without getting a marriage license or a birth certificate. I know it's rare, but, you know, it's not unheard of. So the federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, a passport, or a social security card. Jesus, the things that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and ought to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD, social security, military service, and passports. You know, national identification. You know, being numbered in Israel, participating in the census and violation of the census prohibition that God gave us through Moses. You know, just little things like that. So here we find out that the marriage license and birth certificate involve us in activities that are clearly and unmistakably prohibited by God and insisted upon by the state. You know, that foreign and alien God, prohibited by the first commandment, where God says, you shall have no other gods before me. And, you know, that corollary statement by Jesus in Matthew 6:24, when he said, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve the United States of America and the God of Abraham at the same time. No man can serve two masters. Although the Mormons do a pretty good job, they pay their income tax and tithe. Yeah, they do both. They're gonna sit on the fence and keep one ear to the ground on each side by paying their income tax to Baal and their tithe to the church. Well, okay, but they're the only ones that I know of that do that so effectively. Well, there's the third dot, you know. Dot number one is Sullivan. Dot number two is common law marriage in Tennessee. Dot number three is the birth certificate. Now, this birth certificate's got some more that goes along with it. I'm looking at a birth certificate here called the United States of America Department of Commerce Bureau of the Census, Washington, D.C., Notification of Birth Registration. And it seems that in Helena, Montana, back on April the 23rd, 1939, a guy by the name of Wallace Pedersen, a male, was born. And he was born at Wolf Point, Montana. And then his father's name and his mother's maiden name is on here. But did you catch the title of the birth certificate registration? Department of Commerce. 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 Did you get that? Bureau of the Census. Now, I always thought that birth registration, you know, from the patriarchal point of view, used to be done in the family Bible. And then somebody came along and said, gee, don't you think you ought to have, a birth registration here with the state or with the county recorder's office? I remember when I was born back in 1939, they recorded my birth in Humboldt County, California, with the county recorder. Then later on, they moved it to the State Bureau of Vital Statistics in California, down Sacramento now. Little did I know that they had sent notice of this birth to the Department of Commerce in Washington, D.C., in the Bureau of the Census. Now, we had one of these census events transpire way back in olden days. You can read about this in 2 Samuel 21 or 2 Samuel 22. Let me see if I can identify that for you. I'll tell you the story while I'm looking it up. See, there was a king by the name of David. It's actually in 2 Samuel 24. The old King David. And one day he woke up and he said, you know, being a king and all, I need to know how many soldiers I've got in my army if I'm going to go out and fight with Philistines and Hittites and Babylonians. I don't know how big my army is. And so he said one day, well, go out and count all the people. And one of his generals came over and said, well, sire, that's against the law. God has instructed us that we're not to participate in the census, and that Israel shall not be numbered. David, you know, being the king and all, he said, well, we're not going to have any of this religious nonsense. We're going to have separation of church and state here. And I'm telling you, go out and count them. So the general said, well, okay, boss, if that's what you want. So they went out and they numbered Israel. They numbered the people of Israel. And when they got all through, here in verse 15, so the Lord sent pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. 70,000 people. Now, this was at a time when God took things kind of personal. And David gave him the finger. Now, you'd think God would have smote David dead because David's the guy that did this, not the 70,000 men. How come God killed these 70,000 innocent people? This is the way it's always worded by preachers, you know, and politicians. These innocent people. Well, there's a practice in law that we call being an accessory. For instance, you can take some guy goes out and he burglarizes your house. And he steals, you know, some guns. And then he takes the guns down to the local pawn shop and he sells them at the local pawn shop. And the guy in the pawn shop knows, should know, has reason to believe, or should have known that these guns were stolen. And he becomes an accessory after the fact. He might not have known that the burglary was going to take place. He might not have even known that the burglary had taken place. And he may not even know that these guns are stolen. But when he becomes the fence, buys the guns, and then sells them to somebody else, he's an accessory after the fact. Accessory. Now, you can be an accessory before the fact. If you were one of these 70,000 people and you had been instructed beforehand, thou shalt not participate in a census. And then the census lady comes along and she says, I got to count you, Mr. Gordon. I'm here to take the census. I'm from the government. I'm here to help you. I have that happen every 10 years. They come knock on my door and they want to count me and my family. And so I have to tell them, no, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin will I allow you to count me. And then they always tell me, it's the law. The king has said. The king demands that we count you. And then I have to make a choice. See, I have to choose between, do I want to obey the God of Abraham or do I want to obey the God of Washington? That's all. There's a choice to be made. And so, knowing in advance that this God of Abraham goes ballistic every once in a while and comes unhinged and flies off the handle, bounces off the walls and the ceilings, I say to myself, oh my God, he killed 70,000 people for doing that. He hasn't done it for a long time. I haven't heard of anybody ending up dead or some great plague descending upon the United States or Germany or France over the last 1,000 or 2,000 years. But, you know, you never can tell. You know, it could happen tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Some great calamity come down. So I thought, oh, shucks. I'll just play it real safe, and then I just won't participate in the census program. And that was my conclusion. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but that was the way I figured it. And so when I saw this birth certificate here, Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census, I thought, you know, these birth certificates for your children probably aren't a very good idea. So I stopped doing that. I don't get birth certificates for my children anymore. Of course, I'm an old man now and I don't have any more, but you know, the first three I had, I gave them to the state. The second two, I didn't get birth certificates for them. There came a point in time when I woke up to reality, and so I decided not to do that. But just in case you didn't know, this birth certificate's going to be recorded with the Department of Commerce in Washington, D.C. Now, that's another dot. But then here's another dot for you to keep in mind. A case called Edwards versus California, decided in 1943. I'll just give you the gist of the case. No big deal. This guy lived down in Texas. And, you know, during World War II, since the New Deal came in, you know, in the 30s, and this guy decided he'd leave Texas, Mr. Edwards decided to leave Texas and go to California because he could get higher welfare benefits out there. Well, come to find out, the state of California, not being a bunch of dummies, they figured that all these Okies and Arkies and Texans were moving to California so that they could get higher welfare payments. So they passed a law and said, thou shalt not move to California to get higher welfare payments. So Mr. Edwards, who had done just that, went out there to get higher welfare payments, and the state came against him, prosecuted him. The case winds its way through the judicial process up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court comes back and says, Mr. Edwards is an article in commerce, and the California statute places a burden on commerce. Now, boys and girls, do you understand what that means? You see, the United States government, that is, the United States of America in Washington, D.C., views you as an article, as a chattel in commerce. You are a commercial entity, like a sack of potatoes, or a ton of rice, or a truckload of lumber. That's what a human body is. It's an article in commerce. It's something to be bought, sold, and traded. And that's why over here in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 68, I think it is. Let's see if I'm right. Hey, look at this. And in verse 68, this is Deuteronomy 28. Now listen to this. Here's an article of commerce. And the Eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships, by the way whereof I spoke unto you, that you shall see it no more again. And there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. No man shall buy you, but you're going to be sold. And that comes from the Emancipation Proclamation. You see, boys and girls, back during the Civil War years in 1862, when we used to practice slavery and bond servitude, which is a social status that comes from the Bible and from the God of Abraham, we came to the conclusion that God had made a mistake. And so our president, El Presidente Lincoln, came up with a solution. He said, we will abolish slavery and bond servitude. We will fix God's mistake with the 13th Amendment, which we now have done. So now, boys and girls, you are an article in commerce under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And the state owns you by virtue of your birth certificate. And when we go into national captivity, the United States of America will sell you to the Ethiopians, the Libyans, and the Egyptians. But not to any private owners, because private ownership of slaves has been abolished. And now we have state ownership of slaves. But we don't call you slaves anymore, we call you employees. State ownership of employees. And that works like this. You see, we have the Department of Labor. And the Department of Labor, you see, they come along and they find you a job. It's called, in Washington State, the Department of Human Resources. And in Washington, the Department of Human Resources finds you employment for Weyerhaeuser to put you to work planting trees on the Weyerhaeuser tree plantation. That way you can be a plantation employee, not a plantation slave. And you're owned by the state, and Weyerhaeuser pays 16% of your wages to the state as the rent for you. They have to rent you from the state. Now, isn't that just real special? And then when you get to be old and full of years, you can be pensioned out under a state pension called Social Security until you die. And then by the birth certificate, the state takes title to your offspring, so that in feudal tenure, the state can continue your duties through your children to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation forever in feudal tenure. But God forbid that we should call you a slave or a bondservant. That's politically incorrect. So today we call you an employee of the Weyerhaeuser Corporation, planting trees on the Weyerhaeuser plantation. Now tell me, boys and girls, have we advanced very far from the Mississippi plantation? All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.